Welcome to Between the Studs. Today I have a new face, at least new by face, not new by objects and by what he sells. This is Andrew of Battle Brick, right? Not bricks, right.
Just Battle Brick.
Battle Brick. He is the genius behind these amazing custom military builds that we sell in the store. So let me welcome you. Thank you so much.
Thanks for having me, guys. Great to be here.
Chris is also with us, for those of you who are listening rather than watching our beautiful faces. You exclusively make military sets out of Lego. And how did you get started doing this?
By accident, actually. I grew up with Legos, like a lot of people. I played with pirates. That was my thing back in the early 90s. I kind of got out of it for a while just as Star Wars Legos came out. I was like just aging out, and I was like, oh, my whole life I've been waiting for this. I graduated college, and I started finding out that like adults still play with Legos, and I started building some stuff. I think my first...
All right, I gotta stop you. It's Lego.
Oh, I said it. Lego. I know. I added an S.
You're driving me crazy.
Carlson. I know. I'll never forget. Lego had an article in the fan magazine about not adding the S. But yeah, I started playing with Lego again, and the first set I built, I think it was a German U-boat, and then I had no money because I was in college, and I built an M1, a really cheesy, chunky version of one of these. It was my first set, and I sold it on eBay so I could buy my next set, and it just kept snowballing from there. Came up with a new set, that one would sell, got another one, and eventually one day I went to my boss and was like, I'm quitting to sell Lego full time. And he's like, what are you talking about? Been at it ever since. I think it's been 13 years now.
So 13 years. Was Brickmania making sets at that time?
Brickmania, I think he was making them in the early 2000s, and then he kind of left. And actually, I think just about the same time I started getting into it, he started doing it again and ramped up pretty quick to doing full time that. It was right around like within a year of each other.
Because you have a good differentiation from Brickmania. Yours are built to be more affordable.
Yeah, Brickmania has awesome detail and a lot of really cool stuff. Their stuff's incredible. We're not as realistic as them. We try to keep it at a lower price point. You know, sometimes our stuff is a little bit chunkier. Sometimes I describe it as like G.I. Joe style, where it's not quite the right proportions, but it's... keeps it affordable for our customers.
I would say he spares no expense, but at the same time, it makes it too expensive for most people to buy.
Yeah, he definitely does a lot more like collector type stuff. And you want me to help you out there?
You do a good job of you do a good job of getting parts that you can find again in the future.
Yeah, a big part of our design process is we make it, and a lot of times we'll have like a really cool looking thing, and then we're like, we cannot get this part, or the part is a dollar each. And if you start throwing a few dollar parts on a set, it gets expensive really quick. You know, like I think the M1 is like 400 pieces plus the tread link, so the price can definitely add up quick. Especially the way Lego bricks are. It's an incredible building product, but they're definitely expensive, as you guys all know.
And that's what a lot of people don't realize when you're building these custom sets, is that you're buying them the same way they would. There's no secret to go buying Lego.
Yeah. No, there is no magic marketplace.
Lego's not cheap. No one's really making money on Lego except Lego. Mm-hmm. I mean, they've got a monopoly on Lego. It's not fair, is it?
No.
You're sourcing these parts just like anybody else could go out and source parts.
Yeah, just on the open market, anywhere we can get them. And we always are kind of having to change stuff up. If a part becomes successful in one of our sets, then it could be gone tomorrow, and we always have to adapt to that.
And I think that's how we first met, is you were getting parts from us?
Yeah, I was buying parts from you on Bricklink, and then one day you're like, hey, you're in the Atlanta area, you should come check out the store, and we kind of talked from there about setting up a partnership, and I think you're one of our first big resellers, and still one of our biggest.
We've been selling your product for about 6 years now.
Yeah, that sounds right. Yeah.
And about as long as we've been open. Even though it's much more affordable than any other big military resellers out there, it's still expensive. So it's hard to keep that much stock on hand. But since we've been selling it for 6 years, we have a huge selection of your products now.
I got a little bit of everything.
We try to have two of everything.
Yeah, and we find with our resellers, like the resellers like you, and we have a couple other ones that stock more of our stuff, they definitely do better. We've had sometimes people will get like a few hundred dollars worth of stuff and sprinkle it all through, and it just doesn't grab the attention and doesn't have the selection. Yeah. And right now, you should see his case. It's amazing. I have like 300 minifigures all perfectly set up. It looks like the soup aisle in the grocery store. Yeah, it's good stuff.
First of all, for anyone who might not know, would you explain what an M1 is, and then why did you decide that to be your first experimentation into military Lego building.
So I was kind of a weird kid growing up. I was really into like history, playing guns in the woods, paintball, you know, all that kind of stuff. And all me and my friends, all this weird fascination with like the military, even though none of us actually ended up in the military. But we were always really into the M1 tank because it was like the biggest and the best, and like the Gulf War just happened and it was really successful there. And I was just always fascinated because it was so big and so well armored. And that was the first set. I don't know why I was just drawn to trying to make that. Like I said, the first one, if you looked at it, it was like, it was kind of like a G.I. Joe set where like it looked a little bit dangerous to use. It I don't think it was safe to drive, but it's kind of evolved. And then this is the, I think this is like the fourth or fifth version of it, that it's come out really well over time.
You were talking about sourcing pieces and how that's always this hurdle you have to make when you make custom sets like this. But you guys do make your own pieces?
Yeah, so we work with three customizers, I should say. Brick Arms, which is the one a lot of people know of. We also work with Sidan, who's out of Taiwan, and like the treads on the M1 tank. These are actually heavier duty than the treads Lego makes, and they're more realistic. These are from Sidan. And then we also make a lot of our military equipment. We have some injection molders that we use in the U.S. to make a lot of this stuff.
Okay.
So it's either Lego, Brick Arms, our stuff, or Sidan. That's pretty much who we use.
I don't know how much it costs to make custom pieces, but they're probably just as affordable as the Lego. Or just as expensive as the Lego pieces, right?
Well, it's actually more. So when Lego, the biggest cost from a Lego part is the actual, it's called the mold that the plastic gets injected into. It's a piece of solid steel that gets drilled out with a CNC machine. It is extremely difficult to get like the tolerances right. That's why Lego is really expensive, because they have the best tolerances and you pay for that. So the plastic itself, people are always like, oh, it's just a few cents worth of plastic. Like, that's absolutely true. But the tools that the plastic is being injected into, the prices are astronomical. They're massive, and so you kind of have to spread that out over the pieces.
I once read that the molds that Lego uses are $300,000 to $400,000 each, and that was 20 years ago, just for one mold. You know,
I believe it. Yeah,
and there's limited life on them, right? You can only have so many molds before it cracks, right? The heat.
Yeah, they'll actually fail over time. So you get this amazing mold, get it just right, and then you'll use it up, and then you have to buy a new one. And
wow.
Yeah, so Lego is always maintaining and replacing their molds. And any injection molder would have to do that, yeah.
We looked into making minifigure display cases one time, and it was over $10,000 for the mold. And then they had all these questions about size, and I'm like, I don't know. Forget about this. I'm out of here. And then you just happened to have a great minifigure case that you were selling, and I was able to get them for you.
Yeah, and those ones are made by Sidan, and they do a pretty good job about it.
They're really good. And then you're doing your own printing on real Lego parts.
Yeah, that's a big part of the business now. People have always loved the minifigures. I think from the enjoyment status, we like getting a set done, but people love the figs, and so we've definitely branched out into that. And we do all kinds of printing. We do World War II stuff. We do 360-degree camouflage. The OCP pattern, which is this guy. I've had him bring down. He's the Ranger. He's got a mod gun, so he's got different color parts. I don't know if you can see that. And then he actually has printing, like, all over his body, like, everywhere. There's even actually our logo in the back of his leg. That's how much printing
it is.
Yeah,
you can, let me see that.
Yeah, it's everywhere.
How do you print all around, under the arms, on the arms, on the back? How do you do that?
So that is basically, we send it to a special printer. They actually, between getting the Legos ready for printing and then putting them out on the machine to be printed, everything has to be taken apart, put back together, cleaned a few times. It's like by the time the customer gets the figure, to get it that well printed, you're talking like 5, 6, 7, could be more minutes if something goes wrong to get them all printed. And so we have a really good printer. They have an excellent machine that they use. And like I said, there's a ton of setup to get it all done, and they print everywhere. And those figures in particular can look great.
So when Andrew said his logo is printed on the back of the legs, it's inside the legs.
What?
Do you see that?
How? So, I mean, you just set the machine up to rotate it, or does it print on every side at once?
Their process is actually a little proprietary. They don't tell me, but I do know that it requires, there's someone, a skilled operator, operates the machine and has to set the pieces up in these huge trays. and the trays have to be just correctly positioned for it to print correctly. And it's like, I think the person who does it, it's like their full-time job. That's all they do is printing.
So the arms are have the camo printed even on the inside. So they're taking the arms off the torso and printing underneath them and all that. Because I've seen some Lego minifigures, like the chrome gold C-3PO that's worth like $500. Mm-hmm. If you look at him, Lego didn't even move his arm when they spray painted the chrome gold on him. Or however they put it on there. Mm-hmm. Because once you move that figure, it's white under it.
What? Oh, yeah. Man, yeah.
And it looks so cheap. So, like, you can go out on the market and you can get fake Lego chrome gold C-3PO's. And they actually look better than the Lego's version. Lego's version looks terrible because it's got that white stripe where the arm goes.
So if a small individual company can do printing like that, why doesn't Lego? Is it just an expense thing? Do you think it's too niche?
I think it's really a small market. I also think like our printing process is really labor intensive, and like I don't think Lego, most of their stuff is very automated. It would be, even for an automated line, it would take a lot of work to get something set up to print on that many sides and put it together. They also use, there's different printing processes, and the one they use is better suited for flat printing versus the one we use. And I think it's just, you know, it's just very specific. And I think you guys have seen, even in our generation, they have explored more. Like, used to be the legs were always blank, and now you'll see pockets and shoes and a little bit, but they don't go as detailed as some of the customizers, for sure.
So with the mystery minifigures that Lego makes, they started printing more on the arms and getting more detail, but they also increased the price, $2 or $3, almost doubled the price since they first came
and
out.
Dual molding on legs and arms now is becoming more and more common. Do you have a favorite fig?
Yeah, I think the Ranger is a favorite. Mm-hmm. He's actually not down here. I love the SWAT Point Man, which he's similar to the guy in the SWAT truck, but he has the heavy duty riot shield. And then one of the guys we just came out with that I also like a lot is, these are also 360 degrees, is we did the Airborne guys from D-Day. And so they came out really good. We've got the American flag, which used to be faced this direction, and now they've switched it, and now it always faces forward. But the World War II guys had that. And he came out really well, and he's got all the grenades and his ammo pack and his 82nd Airborne.
That Airborne logo printed on him is so cool. Didn't you used to do stickers for him?
Yeah, we used to do stickers, which customers didn't like because they would fall off. And then also we didn't like them because to get the stickers to match up correctly with the cutting machine was a pain. And then to put them on the arms, yeah, it's a lot of work. So we switched to direct printing for those, and those came out really well.
So you've got a bunch of different lines. You've got World War I and World War II.
Yeah, we got World War I, World War II figures.
More modern military, of course, everything in between. You've got the Pacific, you've got Vietnam, a little bit of everything. Then you've got the SWAT, and more recently it seems like you're getting more into like other countries' military or special forces.
Yeah, so we have, there's one over there, it's the KSK, which is the German Special Forces. We had some requests for him. We've got EKO Cobra, which is the Austrian like special police. We have the Russian FSB, which is like their internal security service. That's a figure we just came out with. I think you got one of those upstairs. I'm trying to think what else we have and then we have a lot of British figures. We have a lot of British guys. So we have a British paratrooper. He's got his custom printed beret. The new version of him too has a Union Jack printed directly on his vest, which is pretty cool. And then he's also got the 360 degree camo pants that came out great. Oh, and we also have the SAS, which is another special forces.
Would you say, so like this is the KSK from German Special Forces?
Yes.
Do you get a lot of orders from Germany for these?
Yeah, we do get a lot of orders from Germany. And then a lot of guys too that were in the Special Forces, we get a lot of veteran clients. And they were like, well, I worked with these guys here. I trained with them, so they'll get to pick up a figure. It's kind of like if they have familiarity with who they are, they'll grab them. Because like, okay, you know, I was deployed with a KSK guy, or we did training in Europe together.
Speaking of which, we were at Brickworld Chicago 2019, and we had your figures there, and a DEA officer came up and found his minifigure, and he was so excited. I think I told him to contact you directly because he wanted, everybody of course doesn't have the exact same uniform on, you know, they've all got little differences in styles. I told him to contact you to get ideas, but he loved it. He said it was perfect.
Yeah, he was interesting because a lot of the figures were, we don't go to We try to make it like the gist of the figure. We don't always get super realistic. We do a lot of just like photo research. But the DEA guy is actually my roommate from college is in the DEA, and he's in one of their SWAT teams. So he sent me the pictures of all of his gear. And so I have the guy from you contacting me saying, no, we wear green. And then I have him sending me, he's like, no, we wear black. And I guess sometimes there's some variation from what office they're in wearing. And it was funny because he wanted him done differently. And like, that was the figure I'd done like the most research for. And he still can't get everybody happy. I was like, ah, come on.
Well, maybe it was black because it was night ops. And the other guys were green because they were jungle ops.
I don't know. Yeah, I think it's just different field offices. But I was like, but we did. I think we did end up giving him some green vests like he wanted. But
so you've got a CIA officer here. And he's got a like a skull baklava on. So you're saying all CIA officers don't have skull baklavas?
No, people just like those. But, and this, you know, kind of gives him an air of mystery. And that's another piece we have custom printed that came out well.
It is one of my favorite figures. Is this the helicopter crew chief?
Yeah, we have the helicopter crew chief. We use the Lego dark bluish gray, and he has some custom printed pants, and he's got a, you know, machine gun, and he's got the helmet. He's got the skull printing on his mouth guard that Sidan did.
That skull printing on the mouth guard just really sets it off.
Yeah, people really like that. Yeah.
Makes it awesome.
I notice you have both yellow and skin tone figures. Is one more popular than the other? Have you always done that?
Yeah, that was kind of an evolution because growing up like you guys, we had yellow. We didn't have skin tones. And like I was pretty loyal to the yellow and I still kind of am. But people started asking for the flesh tones. And so we try to accommodate whenever they come up. They're really expensive. They're like three, four, five or more times the price. And so we'll scoop them up and we offer kind of both. So usually our cheaper figures will have like a yellow head. And then if we can get a flesh head for something, we'll grab it. And another figure, I forgot to grab them. The African-American figures sell really well. And those heads are like, they're so in demand and so hard to get. Like if they come up somewhere for sale, like they're just gone. And we've been lucky enough to get some and those have remained hugely popular, but we've blown through, you know, thousands of those.
Do you have to take the prints off a lot of the time or do you use the face prints that are on there?
We usually use the face prints that are on there because it's really hard to get Lego printing off because it's really well done. On the head, because it's curved, it's even harder. So we either print on blank ones, like with the CIA officer, I think the Austrian EKO Cobra has a custom printed head, but then we just get heads that look as close as possible to something that, like, you know, a soldier would wear.
I mean, in general, flesh tones versus yellow.
I still feel like it's really polarizing. Some people remember the yellow and are fine with it, and other people are like, no, it has to be flesh. This doesn't look right. Yeah.
Well,
yeah.
It's funny. We have kids that are starting to buy, young kids that are buying the yellow heads from like the old Star Wars lines and Harry Potter because they want the OG figures, you know, and because Lego still is making on all their own proprietary stuff, they're still making the yellow heads and skin tones that the kids want their military figures to match their Lego City figures.
Mm-hmm.
You know, so I would say you're right. I mean, it's just split right down the middle. We're starting to make our own Sig figs in the store, and the guy who's making doing our printing, we want the light flesh, of course, and he said to get the light flesh heads, it's a lot. I mean, it costs a lot of money, and of course, we want our own printing on them, so he's got to get blank ones, and he said there's a guy on eBay that sells them in bulk, but they've got nicks and stuff in them.
Well, so does my face.
They're all
yeah, they're realistic. Yeah, exactly. They come pre-worn.
I don't have a perfectly smooth face.
No, they're all imperfect, so if you don't mind some imperfections in it, then we can get those. And I'm like, no, I don't want.
Yeah, because people will not be a fan of that.
No,
yeah,
I wouldn't want that. So I guess somehow he's getting them off the truck, you know, and selling them. But if you go out there and look for blank light flesh heads, you'd have a hard time finding them. I don't know how you guys do it.
Yeah, it's definitely always a battle to get the parts, for sure. And we always do the best we can, but, you know, sometimes still people are like, why doesn't this come with a more green torso? And I was like, I'd love to have more green torsos, but I just can't get them.
We had black torsos in bulk one time. They were Lloyd minifigures, thousands of them, and we still do, actually. I was like, oh, Andrew might like these a lot for customizing them. And you bought some and tried them out. What's, like, some of the process of getting the ink, Lloyd's ink, off his, just in a nutshell? I know it's kind of proprietary, but how hard is it?
Well, that's part of the reason our figures are expensive, and I talked about that 5 to 7, 8 minutes, is we go through a process where We have one guy, he's like our specialist. He's the paint removal man, and he can get a torso ready for printing. But it takes a lot of work because Lego obviously prints it and they don't want it to come off. Mm-hmm. So we remove it. I can't sell exactly what we do. If you're wondering to do it yourself, you can do it with Brazo. But the black is problematic because when we do the process, any imperfection shows up in black, just like a black car. So we actually had to add an extra step to those. We had to get a car buffing wheel and buff those pieces, and it was just so much work that I was like, Chris, I'm sorry, but I just can't do it anymore.
Yeah, obviously yeah. It's too much work because you haven't bought anymore.
Yeah, I know, I wish I could, but like, yeah, those were a labor of love for sure.
Now, you are the sole designer in your company, right? You are the one who comes up with all the designs, correct?
Yeah, I do all the design work on the figures and the sets, and then we have a staff, you know, that does sorting and customer service and all that kind of stuff.
Do you design the prints as well? Do you draw those up? Or
yeah, so I have some graphic artists I work with. I will usually give them my crude drawing, and then they'll make it beautiful. And then I'm good at telling what's wrong with it, but I can't give them like a like if you were to ask me to draw some like a picture of a person, I won't be able to do that. But I can get the camo where it needs to be usually.
Can you tell me, you mentioned a little bit about research, looking at a lot of pictures, but can you briefly tell us your design process? When you get a request for a new vehicle or maybe you want to change up one that you have, what's your process? What do you start first and how do you get to a finished product?
So we kind of think like what price point we want it at. Mm-hmm. And that kind of gives me a rough idea of how many pieces it is. And then we usually start with, like, a tank. We always start with a tread construction because that is always difficult to get the treads to work properly. They're really finicky. And then from there, we'll kind of get everything done the size it is, and then we'll price out the parts. Then we'll kind of be like, this part is a little bit expensive, and we'll change it out. We'll get it as good as we can. Then we'll build a prototype. And a lot of times you get in, you're like, this set's awesome. And then you get in, it's like, And then we try to fix it up so it's more stable and as playable as can be, but still look good. Because sometimes when you get the curves, like you have to do some unique building techniques. Once that's done, we'll go to a production run. We'll make the instructions, get them all parted out, and all that stuff done.
Have you ever gotten really far in the design process and then realized either a part was unavailable or that part went way up in price and you had to kill the whole project? Has that ever happened?
Yeah. So the Warthog, which is back here, I had actually been working on it for a while, and I realized that it was going to be like a $600-$700 set. And I was like, I got to start over because I made it way too big. And sometimes we kind of have to embrace the fact that our sets are not quite to scale and a little bit smaller, but we're trying to make them so they're affordable. So we had to start that process over.
Is there a particular part in any of your sets that is really expensive, and how much is it?
I think one of the biggest things we've noticed is just like part prices will double. So like wheels will double. Tires, from when we started doing this like 10 years ago, the price of a tire has doubled or tripled in some mm-hmm. cases. Then like the tiles also can go, like tiles will go from being like really readily available to like three times the price they were 5 years ago. And then any really cool, unique piece will get gobbled up really quick.
Do you ever buy direct from Lego bricks and pieces? Because sometimes they have cool pieces for less than 5 cents a piece. Do you ever find that it's pieces you need or want?
We try to be careful buying direct from Lego. I do for my personal stuff, but I'm not sure if they still do, but Lego used to do a thing where if you bought too much, they kind of cut you off.
Which, really?
Yeah.
Okay.
So we're really careful with that. We have obviously Lego does not authorize or sponsor what we do, even though we use their products. And we try to be respectful of, you know, their wishes and try not to upset them. We try to be careful with that for sure.
Okay.
And we also try to support the kind of the BrickLink community and the, mm-hmm. the independent resellers whatever we can.
Well, with them owning BrickLink now, I think they kind of unofficially sanctioned resellers and you guys do and what you do
on BrickLink.
Yeah.
The BrickLink, they sanctioned the buying of BrickLink parts, and I think too they've realized that, like, I don't think they knew what to do with the adult fan of Lego community at first, and I think they've started to realize that it's actually a great community and there's a lot of good stuff going on. And you know, just because they don't sanction it doesn't mean they have to like put the kibosh on it. So
yeah, they kind of turn a blind eye a little bit.
Okay. And like I said, they have rules, and we try to always play by the rules that they set out for sure. And they've been respectful to us, and we try to do the same for them for sure. But definitely, when they bought BrickLink, a lot of people were like, "What is this going to mean?" And we still are kind of in a lot of ways.
One of the things I hear other LEGO people talk about is that LEGO is more and more trying to go green and being more environmentally conscious. And they build a product that is non-recyclable and lasts forever. So one of the things they're trying to do is get it back in hands through donation, get old stuff recycled. But we're doing that. We're helping in that, in a sense. Maybe that's another thing we have on our side that, you know,
With the reading and reused.
We're getting it back out. We're finding new uses for old pieces.
So you said that you've redesigned this like 5 times?
Yes.
The tank, the M1A2. Why did you have to redesign it?
So originally my first one was a little bit chunky, and then the slopes weren't really right, and the curvatures, because the tank armor is so unique on the M1 because it's actually geometry. Instead of having a flat surface, you do a slope surface, and there's more armor to come in contact.
Mm-hmm.
But, you know, LEGO as a building system was originally built, like, remember the old days, like, everything was squares, basically. Yeah. Like, their old towns were just straight squares. Even their cars used to be, like, remember the old police trucks? It was like a box on wheels. And so over time, we just try to adapt and make the slopes better. And also, too, like, we've learned new techniques and new ways to try it. You know, and we also try to balance, like, for a while, customers really cared about the price. And then some people said, you know, I'd really like to spend a little more and have a little bit more realistic tank. And, you know, we try to accommodate as much as best we can.
Have you ever run, like, 2 at the same time? Like, a more realistic one like this and then a cutesy little chibi?
We actually do. We have a value version of this. I don't know if it's back here upstairs, but the funny thing is that tank is exclusively to be like an affordable kids tank, and when we repost it on our Instagram or Facebook page, we still get lit up with like, this isn't realistic, that's not an M1. I'm like, I totally agree, it's not for you, buy the Ultra if you want it. And I'm like, yeah, it's always hard to please everybody, but we try, guys.
Yeah, so you have, is it the Expert or Ultras?
We call these the Ultras, which are these ones, which they come with the custom printed OCP figures, which are all way around. They have a lot more higher piece count. The proportions are a lot better, and it's got the bigger tank treads, where the smaller one has the narrow tank treads. It doesn't have the side skirt armor. It's a lot smaller, and it comes with just a basic minifigure.
How many other sets have a basic version as well?
We've tried it with a few. So our World War II sets, our tanks, we have some that came with figures and some that didn't. We still do that for like the Sherman and the Panzer. And then the A-10, we used to have a basic version, but it gets too hard to carry so much stuff in stock. So I think it's just the German tanks and the M1 right now that we have the basic and deluxe. Some people want figures, other people don't, and try to meet everybody where they're at for their price point.
I do want to mention some of our best sellers in the store. I'm really surprised that it's the SWAT stuff, because LEGO makes police, and they make some police that they make are kind of like Chase McCain. Mm-hmm. Has like a vest that he's got a police vest on. Mm-hmm. And he looks good, so you can make a SWAT guy out of him. But your assaulter and the point man and the riot control and the SWAT sniper sell like crazy. Like, kids really like the SWAT stuff, and I think we have the SWAT truck back here too, which is a big seller.
Yeah, people love the SWAT truck, and we redesigned this. I think it's only had really 2 redesigns, but we did this one, the latest version. We wanted to make it look a lot more aggressive, basically a version of the SWAT assaulter with it, and then he's got room for 4 SWAT guys in there, and then he's got the turret to come out. This is one of those sets, like, sometimes the sets, like, I make them just because people are interested in them, but I really like the SWAT truck. This is one of my favorite sets. I usually keep this one built on display on my desk. But that one came out really well. People love this thing, and then it becomes hard because the pieces disappear.
So how many times have you had to redesign a set because the piece is no longer available?
It basically now it happens once a year. Like, we'll sell out at Christmas, and then I go back to the drawing board. And a lot of times people are like, why don't you guys come up with more sets? And a lot of times I'm just trying to keep the stuff we have going. So I will redesign it. I'll try to check the instructions to try to, we're always trying to make our instructions better because everyone's at a different place with their building abilities. And then we'll try to find the pieces that we can't find anymore, find a substitute. And so that's always a big part of our process, updating them just for the pieces.
And that's something that's really interesting about your sets that you're making, is they basically, they're like limited editions.
Yeah.
Because once that part is gone, it's gone. And we know Lego doesn't come back out with some parts. You don't have them numbered. They don't say limited edition, but they probably are.
They'll look similar, but there'll be minor differences. And I think you guys probably see it too. Lego will come up with like a really cool piece, and you're like, oh, this is so cool. And they'll have it for like 2 years, and it won't be too hard to get. And then the next year, they just won't make it anymore. And you're like... And that could it's happened before where a piece will be really high production and then it'll stop and like it'll just never come back.
Well, I know for one thing is you can only get a certain number of bricks out of a mold. The molds will break or they'll go bad. So they have to decide if they want to keep making that brick or discontinue it.
Right. You know? And they're always coming out with each year is a whole new product line.
Your Jeep is one of my favorites.
Yeah, that's another one that was a lot of fun.
And it's just so simple. It looks exactly like it should. And it's more affordable than a tank. And this is probably one of our better sellers. Every time we order these from you, it's like four or five at a time. Whereas the tanks are like one or two at a time.
Yeah, a little bit slower. And that one has the custom printed torso that we do in the U.S. that people really like. It's got the World War II rig on them.
I really like the A10 Warthog. Is that a pretty good seller? It seems like we're always ordering more of these too.
Yeah, that one's a pretty good seller. That is one of those ones that like I am not happy with it. I'm never satisfied. I redesigned it twice and I actually made a kind of a pivot because I originally wanted it to be around 70. And I ended up pivoting, so I made a basic version that was around 60, and then I made this is the more detailed version, the expert, which is over 100. And then I redesigned that twice already, and actually I'm coming out with a new version because I'm still not happy with it. I want it to be more realistic and still keep at a lower price point. Mm-hmm. But this one is, we grew up with A-10s. Like, everybody else had the cool F-16s and F-15s at the Air Force Base, and we had the A-10s, you know, the giant plane built around the gun, basically. And yeah, we always like the A-10 for sure.
Pretty much everything you do is realistic and real life. You've got a couple of things that are not. Is the Juggernaut a real thing?
No, people just asked for that. It's got an EOD heavy assault armor. I know the military uses them for bomb disposal, but it's kind of upgraded to people ended up using them as like in like paintball as like their armor setup or... Mm-hmm. You know, as a heavy assault trooper.
And even on his armor, it says, get some.
Yeah, yeah.
That's a real video gamey type of...
Yeah, somebody requested that.
Something to say. These sell so well. I mean, they're just so cool.
So they're like Space Marines or...
Yeah, they look like Space Marines, yeah.
Like a fantasy, some kind of fantasy.
The heavy assault armor itself, it was actually in the first Rainbow Six game. They had when you picked the heaviest armor setup, you ended up in an EOD suit. So it's a lot of video games, but I know.
So I noticed you have a few really cool-looking helicopters. You have the Black Hawk, just a generic army attack helicopter, the Warthog. How come you haven't had any more jets? Is it just because of scale, size, pieces?
There's a couple things, like... planes has never been my real interest.
Okay.
And because of the limited time, I spent a lot of my time on the tanks and just redesigning stuff for parts. So if there's anybody out there that would like to design planes, we might be interested in hiring you. Let us know. We've been trying to do more, but like I said, it's never been my big... It takes almost like a different kind of skill set, I feel like, to make a plane or a spaceship versus a tank. So if you're out there and you want to build some military jets, hit up Battlebrick.
All right.
Plus, I'm sure there's a lot of people that could design a really cool one for you, but those parts would be unattainable.
Yeah.
Right, right.
So you've got to make a jet or a plane that is with common parts.
Yeah, and in this price range.
So much harder to design a set.
Is there anything you're working on now that you can kind of tease us with?
Yeah, we got a couple things. We've had a lot of requests. I've been working on this for a while. We've got a bad guy tank coming out, which will be Russian in nature, and it's coming out really cool. I was actually working on it right before I got here. I'm going through the process of making sure it'll work properly and stick together. We also have another video coming out. Our first one did really well. It went viral. This one, we hired a real film crew. We had some really cool sets thanks to the Atlanta Brick Co. that we use as background for our sets. That's going to be coming out. We also have a bunch of more figures that are being worked on right now. We have the operational camouflage pattern, which is the current one the Army uses. We're getting the universal camouflage pattern that was really controversial because it didn't really work anywhere but in gravel driveways that was around for a while. But that one we're going to do because a lot of people want it because they had it when they were in. Oh, and then we're working on another one that I won't say, but there's another camo print coming out.
Okay.
We got a bunch of prints coming out, and the tank is the next big set that we'll be releasing, which should have been out by now, but we're still working on it. It'll be really cool when it gets here, and then that video, too, will be great.
Just like everything else in the world right now, there's a delay in you getting out your product.
Yeah, well, this one was actually the printer just jammed and broke down, that special printer, and so they've been working on that. And then they're really busy too, so it's interesting. Thanks for a lot for having me on, guys, and I really appreciate it. Make sure, if you want to see Battle Brick products in person, people always want to ask me where to go. Atlanta Brick Co. is the biggest selection, so come on down.
Sweet. And you are in Atlanta.
I'm in real Atlanta. I'm not...
Yeah, in Noonan.
Chris is in Noonan, which is a bit of a stretch. Like, it's 45 minutes. We'll give it to
45
him.
45 minutes? Okay.
Yeah.
So that's another reason why we are working together, because it is easy to work with somebody that...
Who's local.
...lives down the street, or 45 minutes down the street.
I'm not trying to, you know, toot your horn, but, like, I've been to a lot of Lego stores, and this really is a great one to check out for sure.
Well, thank you.
Thank you. This is the part of the show where we always say, plug yourself. Give us your website and all that good stuff that people want to hear.
Our website is battlebrickcustoms.com. You can also follow us on Instagram and on Facebook. Thanks again, guys, for having me.
Thank you so much.
Oh, and we're on YouTube, too. We have some stuff up there.
Tell us about your YouTube channel.
That's actually really small. We did that, our first video that went viral, that was just kind of like it's like an army recruiting video, but of Battle Brick stuff. We've had just a couple product highlights, but a lot of that got derailed because during COVID, my staff was doing nothing but sorting Lego, and we didn't have time for it. But we're trying to do more of that, and like I said, we got a really cool one coming, so stay tuned.